Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ballet is brutal, man.
Mm. Oh my god.
No, not for me.
It's just people criticizing you your entire life.
Yeah, and you can't have pizza or cake.
I find it hard to determine whether this is a good film or a bad film, but I do feel like it achieves exactly what it's supposed to be.
I mean, if you kind of like Dirty Dancing, you'll probably like this. If you like Mandy Moore, you'll probably really, really like it.
The only sort of classic dance movie trope that this doesn't have is a group of evil dancers who dress mostly in black and gold. I know there are people who would hate it, like with a passion, but equally, there are people who are going to love it forever.
This episode of Flix Watcher Podcast is brought to you by ClearVPN. ClearVPN is the first effortless VPN for a secure and personalized online experience.
ClearVPN helps you access any content, secure your online interactions, and bring your internet life to a whole new level with just one tap.
So whether you want to unlock streaming and entertainment, or secure communications, or improve your online gaming, the app provides you with ready-made shortcuts.
Movie fans like yourself can take advantage of the special Netflix and HBO shortcuts to watch other countries' Netflix and hot HBO premieres.
Woo! Yeah, so no matter where you are, you can now access shows and movies from other countries' libraries and never run out of options.
So many films at your fingertips.
Absolutely. Yay!
Head over to clearvpn.com/flixwatcher and get 25% off.
And ClearVPN is the only VPN you'll ever need because it clearly understands you. Want, tap, and enjoy.
More films!
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Flixwatcher Podcast. Today I'm joined by O'Hara.
Hello.
Zaltzman.
Hello.
And Sadler.
Hello.
AKA the Helen Trinity of podcasting, and we're going to be talking about Center Stage.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes, and thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have the Helens. We've got Helen O'Hara and Helen Zaltzman. If you'd like to say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hello, I'm Helen O'Hara. I am a film journalist and podcaster, often for Empire and the Empire podcast. And I have just written a book called Women vs. Hollywood, The Fall and Rise of Women in Film.
And who you see?
I'm Helen Zaltzman, and I make the podcasts Answer Me This, The Allusionist, and Veronica Mars Investigations.
So that's the latest one, isn't it? The Veronica Mars Investigation. I've never seen Veronica Mars. Is it?
Well, we're just powering to the end. So if you start now, you can probably catch up with us just before we finish.
And how's it been revisiting the show?
Well, the gender and sexual politics have aged very badly.
Ooh, when did it come out then?
It started in 2004 and then was cancelled in 2007 and then came back for a movie in 2014 and a series in 2019 that made the fans really, really angry, which is why when we started the podcast, just at their lowest ebb of enthusiasm for the show. Really nailed it. But it's a good show, except for the things that I mentioned before that are bad.
I think it's surprising how little you have to actually go back to be ashamed of what you used to like. Because I would have thought, 2000s, that's fine. But then it's like, it's not.
No.
90s, no.
Sometimes it's last week. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Can't like that anymore.
Can't trust anything in the past.
So tell us about Illusionist.
Oh, The Illusionist is an entertainment show about language and how and why we use it in the ways that we do.
And typically it kind of centers around one word, which you do a bit of a deep dive into and get some experts on words. I don't know what that word is.
A recent one that I did that was interesting was people who analyze public apologies and identify why most of them are not apologetic at all. And in fact, I can think of very few where you think, oh yeah, they really are sorry. Because most of them are just like, I'm sorry if I caused offense. Now, can I be restored, please?
That's in a bid, I guess, not to get cancelled or politicians, right. Basically.
Yeah. Whereas actually I think it's a power move just to be properly sorry, and then you're less likely to be cancelled.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you actually choose the words that you use in each episode?
Often it is just I usually want it to be something that I don't already know about, so that I'm interested to find out, and something I can get people to talk about, because, you know, there are some things I can't even Google where I want to find an interviewee. There's a show I want to make about crimes involving the font size on 19th century margarine packaging, but finding people to talk about that is proving challenging, because how do you even frame that question? If anyone's out there, please get in touch.
Well, you heard it first, guys. If anyone knows, then please reach out to Helen Zaltzman.
Thank you. Maybe appreciate help it. With that.
And Helen Hara, you've got this is your third book, technically, isn't it? But this is the first proper book, I would say.
Yeah, well, I won't even argue with you on that. The other two were great, and I'm really glad I did them. But they're kind of like listicle books, so they're lengthy pieces on a variety of films, whereas this is more of like a book with chapters rather than entries. And there are no pictures in this. So I apologize. No pictures. I'm sorry. But this one, it just has more words. So yes, it does feel like my first real book in some ways.
And it does. Well, it's got a fantastic front cover. You say no pictures, but it's got a great cover on it, Women versus Hollywood.
It does have a good cover. Yeah. Yeah. I can take no credit for that whatsoever, but yes.
Well, you must have gone, yes, this will do. I like this.
That's true. I did. And I did feed in on some of the people who are on the cover. So yes, it's all me. The graphic designers did nothing.
Well, the book's out now, isn't it? As this episode goes out, assuming all the Amazons and local bookstores support those guys, I guess, as much as you can do.
Absolutely.
And give them the money. But I've read a book, and it's a fantastic read and very insightful. And I think it starts from the gate where I think a lot of people don't realize how much Hollywood in particular had a lot of female directors, producers, creative staff at the start of it. And then the knobhead men came along and said, no.
Yeah, investors, we call them. But knobhead men works pretty much as well. But yeah, no, that's genuinely it. There were women making films at the very dawn of cinema, like directing, producing, you name it. They were studio heads. Mm-hmm. They ran their own businesses, everything. And then when the big money came in and when it became kind of industrialized, they basically all got forced out. Pretty much all. Like there would be maybe one director working at a time during most of the studio era, if we were lucky. And so it's now, I think we're now at the point where women are beginning to kind of push their way back in. And it's kind of, I mean, it's an impossible point to really write a book like this, because like we're in the middle of it. So my ending spoiler is basically like, let's hope it goes well. But that is kind of where we're at. And so I wanted to look at how we started and where we got to where we are now and how things are changing, hopefully for the better. And what we need to do to keep it that way.
I mean, things are turning, but I wouldn't say, it's nowhere near.
No.
Across the finishing line at all.
No, not even close. We're just, it's the, what's that line about, it's not the end, it's the beginning of the end, maybe? I don't know. It's not even that close. End of the beginning, let's call it that.
The end of the beginning. Well, we're talking about films today, as always, on Flix Watch Podcast. Thank you very much for choosing the film, which was today Helen Zaltzman. And you chose Center Stage. Can you tell us what the film's about and tell us why you chose it? And you got a minute for the synopsis.
Okay. Well, I chose it because people really love this film, and give the people something that they love in these bleak times. Also, I feel like at the moment in this amount of lockdown, you just need things that are very low cognitive and emotional load. And this film's really easy to deal with because everything's very clearly signposted, very explained, nothing is ambiguous. And then if you didn't follow, it's all summarized and danced at the end. And also, if you've seen any other dance film, you're like, oh yeah, I remember this bit, even if you've never seen Center Stage. And there's a climactic dance sequence, which is the best genre of film.
That's true.
It's probably pretty much any, if you've seen any other film, you know what's going to happen from the start of this.
Yeah. And it's sort of a blueprint for a lot of films that followed in the decade after it came out in 2000. But I remember what surprised me when I saw it, I hadn't seen it since about 2002, was that Nicholas Heitner directed it, because at the time I was familiar with his work from Madness of King George, because that had been Oscar bait, and him doing stuff at the National Theatre. And then this, which seemed a little out of character, perhaps.
Yeah, well, the latest one was Lady in the Van, wasn't it? Well, the last one I remember watching that was his. So it's a huge departure.
Yeah, maybe. Although he did do the late 90s Jennifer Aniston, Paul Rudd, Object of My Affection. So maybe I should be less surprised by this. And I should be less surprised that a theatre director directed this film, which has a lot of wide shots of a theatre stage with people dancing on it.
Yeah, I can see why I was attracted to it. Sadler and O'Hara, how are you? What do you guys think to Centre Stage?
I mean, I remember it from back in the day. I mostly remembered the dance at the end. Everything else fades apart from the big dance at the end, which is, as Helen says, pretty much as it should be for this genre of film. I mean, it's no step up to The Streets, if I'm honest, but it is a kind of one of the quintessential ballet movies. Wait, that's really disrespectful to like The Red Shoes. Of this century. Thank you. Important qualification. But it's just a really fun, silly... Fluffy's probably not fair. It does try to deal with some serious stuff, but it's basically using dancers instead of actors. And it's therefore quite straight ahead at times in its storytelling. But the dancing's pretty great.
Yeah, I realised I hadn't seen a dance film that was not edited that much. Like this isn't, because the people are nearly all dancers. They don't have to cut away to show the actor's face and then the dancer's feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a tiny bit of Zoe Saldana, which is clearly body doubled. And you can see the body double's face at one point quite clearly. But apart from that, it's pretty much everybody doing their own steps.
Zoe Saldana's first film.
Yeah.
And I really believe her character should have been the centre of this film, because most of the people in the film don't have a whole lot of personality, but her character does.
Yeah.
And the main character, Jodie, her kind of stakes, her personal stakes are that she has bad feet and bad turnout. And we know this because we're repeatedly told in every ballet class, Jodie, watch your turnout. Your turnout is bad. Your bad feet will never amount to anything. Whereas Zoe Saldana is a rare black ballet dancer in like New York Ballet Academies. Like there's a bit more journey there, a lot more odds against her. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Susan May Pratt playing Maureen, who is the Natalie Portman in Black Swan character, essentially, because she also has a very pushy mother and an eating disorder, and eventually gets out of ballet. And I feel like she has a lot of character as well. And then there's just like a bunch of people where there's like five people that I assume are one person, one bland person.
Yeah, that's about right.
And Helen Sadler.
So this piece had passed me by. I mean, I think there is probably a bit of a gap in my noughties dance film and their sequel. In fact, I was trying to think, I don't have a great sort of dance film knowledge, I think, generally, but I was rather entertained by this. It's got Ian Bailey in it, who...
Who's that?
He plays Jim.
Bland boyfriend.
Yeah.
Who serves canapes.
Well, he's not like the bland boyfriend, because the bland boyfriend is the other male dancer. I can't remember his name.
I was going to say Discount Paul Rudd.
Because there's five interchangeable
Discount
people.
Discount Paul Rudd, yeah. From Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, is he from Band of Brothers? Hold on.
He's also in ER. He becomes a doctor, you'll be pleased to know. He's like a doctor student in this, and in ER he becomes a doctor.
Oh, okay. So he's actually fulfilled his arc. His destiny. Yeah. Is he still with Maureen? Does she appear in ER?
No, she's not in ER, sadly.
But true love.
But yeah, ballet is brutal, man.
Mm-hmm. I mean, oh my God.
No, not for me.
It's just people criticising you your entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can't have pizza or cake.
I still don't really know what a turnout is.
Well, I know what it is, but I don't understand. It's like how you put your feet, but what makes a bad one? Because they all seem to be doing pointing out quite a while, and it looks actually painful. And it break your legs a bit more.
Ballet is sort of like a vocabulary that I do not have. And fair play to them for making this film like very accessible to people when it's about like quite an exclusive art form.
And I think for me, when you said center stage, my heart kind of sank.
Yes.
Because I've never seen it before. And it's like, oh, it's about ballet. I was like, oh, fucking hell. And it's kind of one of the areas where I'm a complete Luddite, and like opera and ballet. I love dance. I'll spend, you know, literally spend hours watching people in Leicester Square dancing. And I love music and I go to lots of musicals, but opera and ballet just make my head kind of want to fall off.
So what about Ballet with Jamiroquai?
Well, this is the thing, right? We're Ballet with Jamiroquai, and I want to say Ballet with Michael Jackson, but we can pick another 80s pop star who's not of ill repute. So we can find other people. Ballet with heavy metal, ballet with motorcycles, ballet with people who get naked on beds.
Oh, yeah, and then the parents afterwards were like, that was wonderful, dear. Seeing you reenact this one-night stand you had with a guy, just perfection.
If all ballet was that good or interesting, I'd say, I would probably go to one. But yeah, whenever
one,
you see someone...
No more.
Whenever that's see, what Nicholas
Heitner
wanted.
This is like top-line ballet, though, isn't it, really?
It is.
Like, it's very, like, minimal top-line.
As soon as someone comes out with a Nutcracker suite, I do kind of go, oh, no. But I think you're right, Zaltzman, in the way that they kind of make it accessible. And you have the anguish that you'd have the teen anguish and you have the fight against. So it's almost like it's just a high school drama set in a ballet school, which is the kind of thing I took away from it. And you had some knobhead teachers, had some knobhead parents. And the kids who were trying to muddle along and do the kid thing because they're kids.
Yeah.
So it's young.
Did anybody else read the Drina books growing up? Is this just me?
Hey.
There was a series of books about a girl called Drina who wanted to be a ballerina because it rhymed, I guess. and I devoured them all. I cannot dance a step. I had Irish dancing lessons as a kid. I was terrible. I have never taken a ballet class and I would be terrible. But it's, for some reason, these books were sort of addictive. And that's very much the tone of this film as well. Like it does acknowledge the fact that there is incredible hard work and like gross toes involved in ballet and getting to the point where you can be a beautiful swan gliding about the stage. But it does also get the tutus and the dancing and the romance and you know, it's quite a solid sort of ballet portrayal, I would think. I mean, even something like Black Swan, which is a lot more grody and intense, you know, is not a million miles from this in terms of the stuff it deals with.
Yeah,
as I think Helen said.
Yeah,
I think the two other films I can think of that contained ballet were Red Sparrow and Black Swan that I've seen, and maybe a bit of John Wick 3.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
Blue Pigeon, Yellow Seagull, films.
Well, you said the Red Shoes. Is that
Red Shoes? Red Shoes, yeah.
Paul and Pressburger. I've never seen that. Is it a worthy watch? I know Paul and Pressburger.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful.
Highly revered.
Yeah.
Astonishing.
Yeah. Amazing.
I think the thing about this, well, they did cast mostly real dancers. And I think they act fairly well with what they're given that the characters are underwritten. And it does feel like the film has to make fewer excuses, therefore. And it doesn't have to talk them up so much, going, wow, look at them, they're brilliant. They can just go... rubbish turnout and you go, I don't know, because they're all doing ballet and it all looks like beyond comprehension. But I think people who know about dance do like this film.
Yeah.
Imagine it's removed from reality just enough to make it fun.
Yeah.
My wife's a dancer. She used to go to Pineapple Dance Studio all the time in Covent Garden. I think she did ballet when she was younger, and she knew what was meant by the turnout. But the interesting bit, which I don't think it's a ballet thing, but was in the final performance where Jodie, she's on the bed with Cooper the knobhead. And then the next scene, she's in red and her hair's all braided up, like in the space of like whip snap time. And I was
This is,
that's a very good point.
This is one of my big questions about the film. That final performance, love it to death. It makes not a lick of sense. Like, could not make less sense. Those changes, there's no way you do them in under 10 minutes. I mean, her hair isn't totally braided. It's twirled in that way that was quite big at the time. Mm. Right. So okay, let's be really, really charitable and say you can do that in 5 minutes. I don't think you can, but sure. But you are not off stage for any less than 10 minutes between those changes. It just doesn't make any sense.
How do they get the motorbike on the stage?
Right.
I mean, that was, I was thinking, like, does it go up the stairs? Did it come around the back?
Probably is a ramp for loading it in. Drive it?
I mean, the acceleration, like, is there enough space to accelerate on a motorbike on a stage?
What about the fumes? Like,
oh, yeah.
The health and safety form must have been, like, huge for that one bike.
Also, the audience were like, a bike. even though they're there to watch ballet and they seem very sniffy about innovation, that seems to be the setup. Ultimately, they adore it. But it's like, I went to see the stage version of Legally Blonde once.
What was that like? Was that a musical?
It wasn't great. I think it was mostly an understudy's day. It was a little underpowered. But the audience, as soon as a dog comes on stage, they're like, ah! And I thought, well, for the actors who are actually doing more work than being a dog for 30 seconds, that's a little dispiriting. And I felt that about the bike.
It's right back to the Shakespeare in Love thing, isn't it? Just have a bit with the dog and the audience will love it. And that is true of every musical I've ever seen with a dog. Everybody loves the dog.
They could have done dog ballet. There's another thing about that end dance performance that I was wondering about, in that it's supposed to be kind of a big showcase for the dance students to get into ballet companies. But there's only about 3 featured players, and one of them is Jodie, who like gets just all the attention. And one of them is a guy who's already a professional.
Yeah.
Because he's replacing someone who's injured. And instead of being like, oh, well, who else would benefit from this opportunity? He's like, I'll do it.
Well, that was Cooper through and through, wasn't it? Because Eva, who's Zoe Saldana's character, was like, Cooper, a big-headed idiot, right at the start. So he kind of showed his true colours quite early on, didn't he? He's a bit of an idiot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to like him?
I don't think so.
I hope not.
He's not appealing in any way.
No.
He is a good dancer, but he's just odious. And he has like a very kind of dissipated vibe to him.
He's very creepy.
The way he dismissed Jodie when she came to his show was just, it was really cruel.
Although she was like hanging out in the wings and being a bit nerdy at that point. Like, I had a bit of sympathy for him at that point that I didn't have for the whole rest of the film, because you know, there's this one girl, you've gone on a date with her literally once, and then suddenly she's waiting in the wings of your show, like going, oh, it looks so nice. And you're like, dude, I have to go back on stage in like 30 seconds. Do you mind if we don't right now? That was the one time I
when I'm in performance mode, I don't want to talk to anyone, let alone people I've had one night stands with that may have proved regrettable in some way.
Is there anything else you want to talk about, guys, before we go to the scores, of course, where we can still chat about the film?
Yeah, I also thought the guy who plays Maureen's boyfriend, the one who grows up to be in ER...
Discount Paul Rudd.
That character has dated a bit badly in that he's so coercive. Like, he pursues this woman, he kind of tracks her down to where she lives. And I think at the time we were supposed to find that romantically persistent, and now you're just like, dude, please take the hint. She's not interested.
But it seemed that she was very, her friends didn't need to twist her arm much at all to get her to go on a date with him. It was,
no.
I get what you mean, because I was thinking, I was like, she didn't want to give you a phone number.
Their romance was more blocked by ballet though, wasn't it? It was the, you know, she can't hang out with him and have ballet because like you can't have ballet and something else apparently.
In 10 years we can date once I've retired from ballet.
Yeah, exactly.
I would love to hear your thoughts about the soundtrack to this film. 2 Mandy Moore songs.
First of all.
2 Jamiroquai songs.
Yeah, yeah.
1 Thunderbugs, remember them? No, of course not. Their album was released on minidisc and then they disappeared.
What? Oh, no.
The Chili Peppers covering Chili Peppers, Stevie Wonder. Yeah.
I thought...
Some great thrust dancing to that.
Oh, God, so much thrusting.
I shall recreate that the next time I listen to the song, because that's all I can see now.
I forgot how much I missed Jamiroquai. They're one of the kind of bands which I loved in like 1997. And then for some reason, haven't listened to them much since. And it's always a pleasure when I hear one track of theirs. And I listened to the album Virtual Insanity and loved it to bits.
Yeah, but that was a great album.
But I think, I really enjoyed the soundtrack. It's one of the things, if you've got a dance movie, if you've got a film like this, Step Up to Fame or whatever, the soundtrack has to be on point. Otherwise, you've got no chance whatsoever.
A lot of Mandy Moore, though.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Mandy Moore?
Is that who it was? Because I was like, I don't know who this is. I feel like I should, but I don't.
Well, she's now star of This Is Us, if that's any help.
Oh, it's okay.
And Tangled.
There's that amazing scene where Jodie busts out of ballet class and goes to a different kind of dance class. And they're all dancing to Candy by Mandy Moore. And it's a bit like that Eric Prydz video where it's just like a lot of thrusting pelvises and bums.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And there's just this like big shot of Cooper's ass like thrusting back and forward to Mandy Moore.
And Jodie's like,
yeah.
What a guy.
No. Didn't love it.
Yeah.
I suppose you have to be into him to love it. And it's very hard to be into him because he's an odious character.
But apart from Mandy Moore, what were your thoughts on the soundtrack, Zoltzman?
Well, I was going to say, I'm would minus points for Jamiroquai. I'm not a Jamiroquai fan, and it appears twice in this film. So,
yeah, that's a lot.
I had to turn down the volume a bit because I was just like, oh, I'm not a fan.
Oh, no, I quite liked a bit of Jamiroquai back in the day. So I have to say, hearing Canned Heat again after so long was positively okay. Although, interestingly, my sister was with me watching it, and I said something about Jamiroquai, and I don't know what I said, but she went, "Wait, he's a man?" Because she'd always thought it was a woman and didn't realise that it was a singer. Cool. Anyway,
he's got
JK.
Maybe that's the thing.
She was very young in the year 2000, you know. She doesn't know. She doesn't remember.
Also, as we learn from this film, men also have moves, Kobe.
Yes, this is true. Sarah, my wife, said there's a bit where Cooper and the other guy in the... when they're training for the big showdown in the rehearsal studios, they kind of did
the big show off.
They're doing their how many pirouettes they could do each, and she just kind of went, basically just comparing cock sizes there, aren't they? And there's a lot of posturing. I thought it was quite funny.
Yeah, I saw this back in like 2002, 2003. No, I just graduated and I was doing this like below minimum wage job from home that was like really dull and depressing. And so I'd watch my housemate had been on holiday to Thailand and brought back lots of pirate DVDs. So I would just like sitting there watching them doing this like boring job in front of them. So I think that was the period in which I saw Center Stage. And then I didn't really think about it much again until I saw Black Swan came out 2011, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
And I just thought, this is the same film, basically. Black Swan has more body horror. Everyone's taking it more seriously, but it's essentially so similar in plot.
Just a wee bit more lesbianism as well. Like a little bit.
Yeah, but I guess that's because it was a decade later. They might have thrown that in if they'd made Center Stage later. But I don't think that Black Swan is a better film than this.
Not necessarily.
It just takes itself so seriously, relatively.
Well, I think that's the difference between a lot of awards contenders, isn't it, versus just films you enjoy watching. So this is Zoe Saldana's first film, before we get to the scores. I meant to look up what her dance profile was.
She'd done some ballet, I believe, as in childhood, basically, throughout her childhood. But she wasn't maybe on the level with some of the others who were mostly professionals or semi-professionals. So she did need some help for that final dance that she has.
And then Susan May Pratt, who plays Maureen, I think was the only one of the leads that didn't dance at all. Even though they're like, everyone, look at Maureen, look at her arms.
At all in the whole film.
The actor was probably just like, I don't know.
Good, she did well.
That's a good point, actually.
But she did quit.
There you go.
Great fringe, though. Terrific fringe.
Sorry,
great
bangs.
Fringe.
Which she kept for 10 Things I Hate About You. Another great film I watched recently. So good.
All right. With that, should we head to the scores?
All right.
This episode of Flix Watcher Podcast is brought to you by Clear VPN. Clear VPN is the first effortless VPN for a secure and personalized online experience.
Clear VPN helps you access any content, secure your online interactions, and bring your internet life to a whole new level with just one tap.
So whether you want to unlock streaming and entertainment, or secure communications, or improve your online gaming, the app provides you with ready-made shortcuts.
Movie fans like yourself can take advantage of the special Netflix and HBO shortcuts to watch other countries' Netflix and hot HBO premieres.
Woo! Yeah, so no matter where you are, you can now access shows and movies from other countries' libraries and never run out of options.
So many films at your fingertips.
Absolutely. Yay!
Head over to my.clearvpn.com
clearvpn.com/flixwatcher and get 25% off.
And ClearVPN is the only VPN you'll ever need because it clearly understands you. Want, tap, and enjoy.
More films! So welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. They are always out of five. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Helen Zed, with your recommendability.
I am going to score Centre Stage 3.65 out of five. I find it hard to determine whether this is a good film or a bad film, but I do feel like it achieves exactly what it's supposed to be.
Helen O.
I am going to go 3 for recommendability because I know there are people who would hate it, like with a passion. So I feel like you've got to be careful who you recommend it to. But equally, there are people who are going to love it forever once they encounter it for the first time. So, you know, it's definitely over the 50% mark, but maybe not all the way over.
Sadly.
So, I mean, this film basically knows what it is and it doesn't make any attempt to not be anything other than what it is. And what it is an hour and 55 minutes of a lot of dancing, some cheesy moments, a soundtrack that is questionable at times. It has some interesting entry points for people like Zoe and like Eon Bailey, if you've only ever seen him in one thing. So, yeah, I mean, if you kind of like Dirty Dancing, you'll probably like this. And if you like Mandy Moore, you'll probably really, really like it. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.5.
I'm going to go for 3.5 as well. I think it's... I was anticipating the worst and it wasn't that. So I think there'll be people who, as Helen Hara says, there'll be people that hate it, but I think there'll be fewer people that hate it than you probably imagine. Or maybe, you know, maybe I just had a bit more of an open mind when I started. And when Cosmic Girl came on, maybe that kind of wooed me a bit in the right direction. Repeat viewing score, Zoltzman.
Yeah, having seen it in 2002-ish, I'll be happily coming back to it in another 19 years. I'd say repeat viewing, yeah, a solid 3.
Once every 19 years equates to 3. Interesting. Helen Hara.
I'm also going to go 3. Like if I was, you know, completely at a loss for something to watch in even a few months from now, I'd probably go like, I mean, sure, fine, put it on. But I don't know that I would necessarily think, ooh, it's Friday night, I can watch Center Stage again. You know, it's not that film. But it passes the time. So I'm going to go 3 again. There's going to be a lot of 3s, I'll tell you that right now. Spoiler for all my remaining scores.
Yeah. It's not Strictly Ballroom. That's the 5 out of 5 repeat viewing 100%. Dance film.
Yeah.
Sadler.
It probably could have been an hour and a half, I think. It is quite long for this type of film. So repeat viewing for me is not quite as high. And I think there's probably a lot of other films that are strongly dance focused that I'd probably give a watch before I return to this. So I know 2.5.
I'm going to go for 1. I might watch again, but I think I've seen enough, and it's quite enjoyable at one time. But maybe once every 19 years, like Hans Zoltzman, that kind of ratio. I think small screen score. Helen Zed.
Small screen score. Well, I have a projector and a 6-foot screen.
There's always people, these braggadocious people, isn't there?
Yeah, it was a lockdown wanker treat and strongly recommend. So 6-foot score, fantastic. 5 out of 5.
O'Hara.
I don't think there was any big loss on the small screen with this one. I mean, you know, yes, okay, if you're watching it on the big screen, you get the full stage effect. But, like, I don't think you miss out a lot watching it at home. So I'm going to be generous for this one and give it 4. Just to break from my 3 streak.
Helen Sadler.
Absolutely a 5. I don't think there's anything that I'd need to see it on a big screen for. And the thing with projectors, it's not like the projector itself, because you can rent them and you've normally got a friend with them, but it's having the wall space with nothing on it.
That's what I've got a screen.
That's the screen, she says.
Rolls up out the ground.
But you've got to have the space. The space.
Just like a little 6-foot bar on the floor. Pop it up in the evening when it's dark.
I'm just envious of your space.
Well, I don't live anywhere, so it was easier to move around than a TV without smashing it.
This is true. Engagement score, Helen Z.
Yeah, I would agree with Helen S that it is longer than it needs to be. I think because there's so much dance in it, that there's probably more dance than in similar dance films. So there's probably like 15 minutes of non-plot dance. So yeah.
Non-plot dance.
Probably not. But it is a dance film, so I guess to a lot of people that's a bonus. What are we scoring again? I've just gone off in a reverie about this film.
Engagement.
I would say it's probably... It slips down pretty easy, but your attention could wander and you probably wouldn't miss it that much. So I'm going to give it like a 2.8.
Helen Horror.
I'm going to go 2.5. I was going to go 2, but then I was like, you know what? I probably would just like want to see how it turns out. I mean, I'm the kind of person when like... If I catch Sister Act on TV, I'm definitely there for the next hour and a half. Like, it's not even a question. It's no Sister Act, but it does have some of the same kind of easy watchability. So it's, even though I don't love it, I can see myself leaving it on in the background. So yeah, 2.5.
Helen Sadler.
Yeah, the amount of dancing in it, that's kind of unedited in any kind of like fancy way is...
unedited dancing.
Bizarre.
But they're showing off that it's real, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, you either have authenticness and it's going for a bit, or like sort of slightly jazzier and not authentic. I mean, you can kind of guess where it's going. You don't really need to be glued to it, but it's an enjoyable time. So I'm going to go for 3.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 3 as well. I think we talked about it at the start, but not really so much in the discussion, but it becomes like a bingo call. You're just kind of waiting for things to tick off. Like, there's a girl who, in the first 5 minutes, she's eating donuts, and you knew she was going to get kicked out, or she was going to leave because they didn't like what she was doing to her body, which is just being young. And there was the Cooper who's going to kiss one of the girls and make them cry, and that happened. And there's going to be the big showdown at the end. I was just like, yep, ding, oh, ding,
and
ding,
someone's
ding.
Going to get injured right before the big show.
Absolutely.
There'll probably be some fusion of a classical ballet and a dance style that everyone says can't be done with ballet, but it is.
The only sort of classic dance movie trope that this doesn't have is a group of evil dancers who dress mostly in black and gold, like, because that's, you get that in all the Step Up movies and, you know, all the rest, but yeah, very absent here. And there's not really enough made of the usual other dance movie trope of the kid from the wrong side of the tracks. Because if they'd made Eva the sort of star of the film, then we could have had a bit more of that, which is the other thing that you get a lot in these films.
Whereas all there is her leotard's the wrong colour at the beginning.
I mean, yeah. And she doesn't like seem to struggle with that. She just comes in wearing a different leotard. It's not like I have no money to buy a leotard. So, okay.
She's just being herself. I did like how like Maureen and the other girls did kind of stand up for her. No, she's really good. The thing that I found most jarring about the, and obviously they kind of hid what the final sequence is going to be at the end, but like Helen said, there was no motorbike in that rehearsal room. There's no bed. There's no subway stages that came on. There was only 3 other people in the rehearsal room when they were doing that thing. So when it all started, there's like 100 people on the stage. It's like, what are we watching exactly? So that did throw me a bit. Hey, it's one of those kind of films, isn't it? They just have to do what they're going to do to make it kind of have that finale that everyone wants to remember at the end and watch once every 19 years, I think.
Yeah, the arrogance of this man to create a ballet that's all about himself copping off with a student and only cast himself in it yesterday. You do wonder about the thought process behind that.
Madness.
The overall score is 3.34063. Fair to middling.
I
thought it was going to be a bit higher, actually, based on the initial scores. It's the repeat viewing that let it down, really.
I do feel like if you're marking it out of 10, it's a solid 7, and I think, you know, you're rounding that score up.
I mean, you don't have to justify how the scores fall here. This is how it works in the Flixwatcher. Right.
Got to trust
in the spreadsheet. Works it all out.
Kobe loves a spreadsheet.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, yes, so do follow us on Twitter, everyone. We are at FlixwatcherPod, and... great reason to follow this, because before we go into every recording, we do a little shout out. And in this case, saying we're reviewing Center Stage with Helen Zaltzman and Helen O'Hara from Empire Magazine. Have you seen it? Give us your thoughts and the score out of 5 for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. And we had, again, this is just me. I was prejudiced to the whole film, and I've been proven wrong. We had quite a strong response for this. Helen Z, do you want to lead us out with the first one that you see on the screen?
Amy Lou says, 5 stars, if only for the Jamiroquai, the red ballet shoes, and that incredible unravelling tutu moment. Yes, to that incredible unravelling tutu moment. If you were scoring this on unravelling tutu moments, this would score at least a 4.
Helen O.
So, at That Dog Is Nice, or Katie, as she may be known more widely, says, I love all the dance and revisit the last ballets every once in a while. The Rachmaninoff, less keen on the Michael Jackson. I also love stuff about dance school, and Zoe Saldana is great, but I really dislike all the love triangle stuff. And the predatory blonde dude story is gross. 3 out of 5 mm-hmm. overall.
Ooh, I thought she was going up higher than that based on the initial how it started out.
That's how gross the blonde dude love story mm-hmm. is, though.
Yeah, it's marked it down that much. Helen Sadler.
This is from Sarah at PepperGirl01. It's the sort of movie that you find yourself rewatching till the end while sitting on the edge of the couch because you'll just watch 5 minutes. It has some deeply problematic issues with the love story, but nothing that can't be resolved by those final dance scenes. 4 stars.
Do you have any more?
I'm not seeing any others.
I'm seeing like a gif of
somebody. I see one that says from Dylan Boo that just says love it so much, and I asked for how many stars and there was no response.
They can express the feelings in numbers.
And then there's one from Crafty Expat that just says, oh my goodness, all the Helens coming together. Oh no, all my Helens coming together. Does anyone know Crafty Expat?
I know her from Twitter. Yeah
I know her. Delightful person. She used to be married to my eldest brother's best friend. That's how I know.
Is that right? Well, hello, Catherine, Crafty Expat. Lovely to meet you. Helen Zaltzman and Helen O'Hara, can you sign off by telling us where we can find you online? Remind everyone about your podcast and books, and we'll say goodbye to everyone who's listening.
Well, you can find me at Helen Zaltzman on Twitter, and my shows are Answer Me This, The Illusionist, and Veronica Mars Investigations, available at the pod places.
I'm Helen L. O'Hara on Twitter, and you can also find me on the Empire podcast weekly, and Women vs. Hollywood is out now in all good and evil news agents. I'm so impressed, by the way, that we've got all this way through the podcast without making a Sadler's Wells jokes about Helen.
So it's a ballet thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been there.
There you go.
It's a ballet, though. Well, thanks very much, everyone, for joining us, and we'll say goodbye.
Bye.
This episode of FlixWatcher Podcast is brought to you by Clear VPN. Clear VPN is the first effortless VPN for a secure and personalized online experience.
Clear VPN helps you access any content, secure your online interactions, and bring your internet life to a whole new level with just one tap.
So whether you want to unlock streaming and entertainment, or secure communications, or improve your online gaming, the app provides you with ready-made shortcuts.
Movie fans like yourself can take advantage of the special Netflix and HBO shortcuts to watch other countries' Netflix and hot HBO premieres.
Woo! Yeah, so no matter where you are, you can now access shows and movies from other countries' libraries and never run out of options.
So many films at your fingertips.
Absolutely. Yay!
Head over to clearvpn.com/FlixWatcher and get 25% off.
And ClearVPN is the only VPN you'll ever need because it clearly understands you. Want, tap, and enjoy.
More films! Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.